an agricultural empire, the fulfillment of the dreams of pioneers, unexcelled in beauty, rich in achievement, and still offering a challenge mighty as the mountains. This is our Northwest Empire.
I'm Felix Bonnell, resident historian for Cairo Radio, heard with Dave Ross Wednesdays and Fridays on Seattle's Morning News. On this episode of the Resident Historian podcast, when the Washington State Patrol was created a century ago, it was a strictly bare-bones operation.
They had tents, they had sleeping bags. They didn't have uniforms yet. We didn't have uniforms for another 3 years.
And then, from the archives, before Dave Niehaus and the Mariners, Bill Shonley was the voice of the Seattle Pilots. But first, let's go all over the map.
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
That's how we know it's Friday in Seattle. The weeping violin announcing Felix Bonnell with today's edition of All Over the Map, which is his quick take on local stories behind the names of local places and local things. And this week, the strange journey of an old ferry boat involved in a dark chapter of history nearly 80 years ago.
Yeah, this ferry boat was built in 1926 in California and called Golden State. It was wooden hull, not steel, about 227 feet long, could carry 75 cars. It served the San Francisco Bay until they built the Bay Bridge in 1936 and the Golden Gate in 37. Then the Golden State and a bunch of other no longer useful ferries were sold and came north to Puget Sound. The Black Ball Ferry people, the private predecessors to the Washington State Ferries, they renamed each of the old California boats using Chinook jargon. That's the regional language that was used by indigenous tribes and early traders. So the Golden State became Kilokan. That means, in Chinook, some kind of aquatic bird. I looked it up in a couple of Chinook dictionaries, and Kilokan could be swan or crane, but probably not white dove, as one old newspaper article said. Now, the dark chapter that the Kilokan was involved with was the wartime transport of 227 Japanese and Japanese Americans from Bainbridge Island to Seattle on March 30th, 1942, 79 years ago this week. They were placed on train cars and most were taken to Manzanar, a camp in California. Now, this was the first forcible removal of Japanese and Japanese Americans under FDR's Executive Order 9066. In those war years, a total of about 120,000 people would be incarcerated this way because we were at war with Japan. And unlike our German and Italian enemies and the Axis powers, Japanese and Japanese Americans looked different from us. Now, the Kilokan was retired in 1972, it was sold in 1975, moved to the old Houghton shipyards in Kirkland, and plans were to turn it into a restaurant or a nightclub. But an arsonist torched it in September 1979, and it burned to the waterline. In the early 80s, they took the remains and hauled them up to Whidbey Island, to the south end there, and scuttled it, intentionally sank it to create an artificial reef. It's now a popular diving destination. So one interpretation is that the Kilokan is an artifact of Japanese incarceration. It was a tool used by the government to enforce an unconstitutional policy that Densho and other organizations are committed to never forgetting. You know, another interpretation, though, is just a boat. It could have easily been any number of Black Ball vessels that did that particular duty on that particular day. I asked Frank Abe, our former colleague here at Cairo, and a devoted history of Japanese incarceration and an activist. He was more aligned with that second interpretation. You know, it's just a boat. But, as he also said, there may be incarceration survivors who would disagree with that interpretation. I guess the bottom line, you know, everywhere you look, above water, underwater, there's objects and places that have stories to tell, you know, if you pay attention, if you look into the context.
Yeah. Say hi to Frank for me next time you see him. He was my editor when I first got there.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Washington State apples. The fruit that's good for you.
With Olympia as headquarters, the battle against highway hazards is fought in five theaters of war, with district commands located in Tacoma, Seattle, Yakima, Spokane, and Vancouver, all connected with each other and with headquarters by a communications network.
Wow.
It's a theater of war, Dave. Well, he pronounced Yakima correctly, though. That's my favorite part of that old clip.
Yeah, what is that from?
Yeah. It's from a 1946 film about the Washington State Patrol.
How about that? Well, yeah. The Washington State Patrol is marking its centennial this year. And like so many things lately, the commemoration has been scaled back a bit. So our resident historian Felix Bonnell is here with a look back at 100 years of State Patrol history brought to us by the King County Library System.
Yeah, so the State Patrol is a big, complex, modern organization. There's 2,300 employees, about half of those are commissioned officers. They're most visible along the highways, but they also investigate cybercrime and do homeland security and special projects, like protecting the 2,500 athletes who were here in 1990 for the Goodwill Games. But the agency also has a fascinating early history. It was just about 100 years ago, in the spring of 1921, when the state legislature created the Washington State Highway Patrol. And why? What was the timing about that? Well, it's right after World War I in the early 20s. More and more roads were getting paved, and there were more cars on them, and those cars were getting faster and more dangerous. I'm told some could go as fast as even 45 miles per hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Hold on. Don't buckle up, though, because seatbelts don't exist yet.
Of course not. I
talked with Chris Loftus. He's director of communications for Washington State Patrol. You know, these are intense times for law enforcement, which is an understatement. Like any agency right now, they're in the midst of adaptation and evolution. That's a whole other story by itself. Those early years began officially on September 1st, 1921, when the first 16 officers, mostly World War I vets, were sent out from Olympia to various spots around the state. Each was on an Indian motorcycle equipped with a sidecar.
And in their sidecars, they carried enough clothing and supplies for sometimes months-long deployment. Every member was charged with patrolling at least two, sometimes three, and sometimes even four counties by themselves. They slept in out of those sidecars. They had tents. They had sleeping bags. They had their guns, their ammunition, and their citation booklets. They didn't have uniforms yet. We didn't have uniforms for another 3 years, but they literally hit the road.
Wow! What's an Indian motorcycle?
That's a brand of motorcycle. It's like Harley Davidson. Oh. Indian was a very famous American brand back in the 20s and 30s. I think it might even be back now, but it's just one of those classic early 20th century American motorcycles. I wonder if they had a hard time recruiting people for that, because you're basically camping out for several months and
like Texas
really popular, giving people tickets and stuff. And they didn't even have uniforms. They had armbands to wear over their civilian clothes for the first couple of years. And along with that tent and sleeping bag, they also had a shovel in the sidecar, because one of their other duties as assigned was fighting any fires they came across. So this wasn't for the faint of heart, Dave, is what I'm trying to say. Now, a real watershed for what was then called the Washington State Highway Patrol came about, a decade or so later, in the early years of the Great Depression, when there was a lot of civil and economic unrest.
There were large-scale riots in Seattle, Tacoma, and Olympia, and a lot of those rioters and protesters came to Olympia, and the Thurston County Sheriff said he wasn't in charge of keeping the Capitol safe, and the city of Olympia police department said, no, we're not in charge of keeping the Capitol safe. And so the governor and the legislature rushed through a bill that turned the Washington State Highway Patrol into the Washington State Patrol and gave that organization full police powers. And so our genesis was very much in a time of strife and a time of protest.
And I looked at the old clips from the early 1930s, and they weren't hugging and kissing the officers in those days. Mm-hmm. Now, in the 1930s, the agency hadn't really matured yet. For instance, it would be decades before they hired their first black trooper in the 1960s or their first female troopers in the 1970s. In those years, this was a white male organization. It's just, you know, part of the times. And Chris Loftus told me that in those pre-World War II years, the hiring process could be fairly politicized.
When you'd have a new governor, you would have a new chief, and you would have kind of a purge. Whatever that governor and that new chief, whatever political party they were in, suddenly all the highway patrolmen were in that political party. And so that changed and ebbed and flowed. But by the time you got to that World War II time frame, you really did have a very organized, thoughtful group.
You know, and in those years, they're also doing all the commercial vehicle enforcement, you know, the way stations all around the state. They were doing the driver's licensing function. In the early decades, the State Patrol was funded completely by the license fees that people were paying to be licensed drivers. You know, in World War II, another early milestone for the State Patrol, you know, there were huge increases starting in the late 30s in military and civilian traffic with all the economic activity generated for preparing for the war, and a huge influx of population of people driving here from all over the country to work at Boeing and the shipyards and other defense jobs. That was really just a watershed decade in so many ways for this area. You know, and not unlike the military, one thing that's always a focus for law enforcement in general, and which will be a big part of the State Patrol Centennial, is honoring those who die in the line of duty. In the past 100 years, a total of 31 troopers or patrolmen are considered fallen officers, the Fallen 31. Chris Loftus knows all the stories by heart, including 29-year-old patrolman Gene Bolstad, who'd been with the patrol for a couple years when he died on September 3rd, 1957, in the surf at Long Beach.
He rescued one teenager. He dove in, came up to the scene, wool uniform, gun, belts, boots, the whole thing, comes up to the scene, dives into the cold water in Long Beach in that full outfit, saves one young man. And then I think the most heroic thing is you've got to know how tired he had to be. And then he went back, and he and the second young man drowned. It's that act of going back, even when he had felt the fatigue and the fear and the worry and the cold, and he went back. And that story, I think, is emblematic of who the Washington State Patrol is. You've just got a lot of men and women who just keep going back into harm's way.
You know, they'd planned a traveling exhibit that would have been featured at each of the district offices around the state, but the pandemic put a stop to that. You know, they do, listeners might remember there's an exhibit at the Puyallup Fair, or the Washington State Fair, every year. If all goes according to plan, there'll be a much bigger display this year. Leading up to it, there'll be blue lights illuminating government buildings, maybe some messages on those highway reader boards. On September 1st, which is the actual anniversary, there's going to be a parade of vintage vehicles from State Patrol offices in Olympia to the fairgrounds in Puyallup. More details on that to come. Now, the centennial activities are fine, says Chris Loftus, but there's something more important than a display or a parade or colored lights.
The biggest thing is that you're going to see what you've seen for the last 100 years. You're going to see men and women on the side of the road doing their job, and that job is to slow you down and to keep you safe. There's three things that we've got to do. If we'd all slow down, if we'd all pay attention, and if we'd never drive impaired, if we'll do those three things, we're going to save a lot of lives this year and every year for the next 100.
Yeah. You know, I told Chris Loftus when I got my first speeding ticket in 29 years last month on I-90 in Ellensburg, I was disappointed to see they weren't handing out special commemorative citations.
Yes.
I'd also wish I thought of the excuse that I was trying to drive the centennial number. But anyway.
Yeah.
I'd like to give the final word today for the State Patrol Centennial to Washington Governor Mon Walgren.
Commander-in-Chief of Patrol and the man ultimately responsible to the people of Washington for its performance, the Chief Executive of the State, Governor Mon C. Walgren.
Let's make Washington's highways the safest in the world. The State Patrol will do its part. I urge you to do yours.
Yes, sir. Well, happy anniversary to the State Patrol. And by the way, the next time you're stopped for speeding, you should identify yourself as Felix Bunnell, the pronouncer of the regional spelling bee. And in case people missed it, here's just a little sampling of how good he is. Here we go.
Speller number 7. The word is nanent. Cuculine. Kilderkin. This word came to English from Dutch. Main pronunciation is like this. Lumpen. Lumpen is an adjective. Irriguous. Oh, man. Those poor kids.
Very
oh,
well
man.
Done,
what a,
Felix.
Oh, what an ordeal that online man. Spelling bee was. Hope we do it in person next year. My gosh.
Oh. Felix Bunnell, you can find all his features at MyNorthwest.com.
Speller number 7, the word is nanent.
It is time
awesome.
For traffic.
For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity.
For this edition of From the Archives, recalling the one and only season of Major League Baseball's Seattle Pilots with broadcaster Bill Shonley.
Oh, that was great. Go, go, ye pilots. Da, 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 da. Go, go, ye pilots. And God, they went. They did.
That's 86-year-old Bill Shonley. He and Jimmy Dudley were the broadcast team for the Seattle Pilots, the Major League Baseball club that played here for just one season back in 1969.
Now it's the third inning in a nothing-to-nothing ball game, and you're now to bring you the action is Bill Shonley. Bill?
All right, Jimmy, thank you very much. For California, the top three of the order once again, Alomar, Spencer, and Jim Fregosi.
Shonley grew up outside of Philadelphia, hearing legendary baseball voices like Mel Allen, Red Barber, and Bill Stern. He dreamed of one day being a big league broadcaster himself. He came to Seattle in the 1950s and broadcast a lot of local sports. Then came the chance of a lifetime.
The city finally got a hold of a Major League Baseball franchise. And as a relatively young man in those days, I got to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster with the Seattle Pilots. And I thought at that time, my goodness, I always enjoyed baseball and doing the broadcast. I might be in baseball for the rest of my life, but it only lasted that little over 1 year.
The Pilots played just one solitary losing season here. Then they went bankrupt and left town.
So the people, the Major League folks from the American League all got together and decided to take the franchise away. Seattle, God bless them at the time, tried their darndest to keep that franchise right where it was, because Seattle, the Northwest, they were the major leagues as far as baseball were concerned. Well, it did not work out. There are a lot of things going on behind the scenes, but that's the basic story. So that the Seattle Pilots then became the Milwaukee Brewers.
There were plenty of backroom and front office shenanigans that sent the Pilots on their way. But since voters in 1968 had approved the Kingdome based on having a team, a lawsuit against Major League Baseball got the Mariners in 1977. But all that was in the future. In 1969, the Pilots played at Six Stadium along Rainier Avenue, where a Lowe's home improvement store now stands. Six was built back in the 1930s for the Seattle Rainiers of the Pacific Coast League. Shanley says it had its own unique charm.
Well, let's see, how do you describe it in this day and age? It was nothing in those days, let's put it that way. The field itself, the playing surface, was manicured to the nth degree. Everything was fine, but had no seats to speak of. You know, there were no suites, no anything. We had 100 hot dog stands, I guess, you know, and soda stands and things like that. It was old school.
The characters were old school, too, including Pilots manager Joe Schultz.
Joe Schultz, he was one of the greatest guys, one of the great characters I've met, and all the people that I have known in sports. You know, at the end of the ball game at home at Six Seattle Stadium, I had to go down and do a post-game show. So Jimmy Dudley would finish up the game, so I would go down and sit and stand in the dugout there. And Schultz and I knew one another. He used to turn around and say, "Chance, the Bud's going to taste good tonight." One of the few times that the Pilots would win the game. And he had some great phrases, which I can't repeat right now, but he was just a great human being.
When the Pilots went to Wisconsin, Shanley could have gone with them. Instead, he decided to stay in the Northwest. Opportunity came knocking almost immediately.
Harry Glickman, who put together the Portland Trailblazers, he found out that I was available. You know, he called me and he said, "How would you like to do NBA basketball?" Well, I had done everything else in the world, but I wasn't too much involved in the NBA in those times. And I said, "Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal." I came down to Portland and we talked and we shook hands. And that was 46 years ago. I'm still with the Blazer organization.
Bill Shanley spent the rest of his career with the Trailblazers, including that team's 1977 NBA World Championship. But he still thinks about baseball and what might have been and what could still be.
Just a shame that the Pilots and the city of Seattle couldn't put that situation together in those years. But the Mariners are there, and they've had quite a run. I hope they have a great year this year.
Let's all lift a cold one in memory of the Pilots and Schultze and hope it's going to taste good for Mariners fans on plenty of nights this season. I'm Felix Bunnell for Cairo Radio.
In the fourth inning for the Pilots, Wayne Comer, Steve Hoadley, and Danny Walden. And the Pilots are still looking for that first base hit off the right-hander Andy Messersmith.
I'm Felix Bunnell at Cairo Radio in Seattle. Follow me on Twitter and read my stories and see my photo galleries at MyNorthwest.com. And please join me again for the next episode of The Resident Historian.
Hi, folks. This is Gene Autry and his Hollywood friends wishing KIRO all the success in the world. So long.